Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Welcome to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown in on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. And as we look down on our little camera on the field across
that's
the
way progress. From
us, that is progress. The actual gridiron of New Era Field and the new turf is on. It's there. You can see this yard stripes in the end zones. The end zones, just in case you're all wondering out there, the end zones are going to be blue.
Still blue.
Still blue. They're going to be continue to be blue. They have, as when they changed over from the red ones a handful of years ago. New field is up. Welcome to the show. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. It is a beautiful day. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Murph is on vacation. We're talking about, I don't know, we got a lot of stuff going on. One of the things, we're going to have John Randall on the show today. And our theme for the
Hall
show today.
Hall of Famer John Randall.
Hall of Famer John Randall. John Randall, a Hall of Famer who was not drafted by the NFL. He spent a little time in, I think, Baltimore or someplace like that, and then ended up, of course, in Minnesota and had a Hall of Fame career, 137 and a half career sacks from his spot at defensive tackle. He was a stud, averaged in 14 years, had 137 and a half sacks. He was a guy, man, and he's a great guy. I've gotten to meet him since he went in the Hall of Fame. He and Thurman, Bruce, Jim, and Andre are kind of buddies. I've rubbed up against him a couple of times, you know, and said hi to him. Great human being, a wonderful Hall of Famer, a great ambassador for the NFL. He's coming on with us at 2. Have you ever met him?
No. Big-time talker on the field, though.
Oh, baby, he was a world-class talker. Yeah.
The motor, yeah. His mouth was almost as good as his motor on the field. It may have been better.
His energy level was unrivaled. Unrivaled. Yeah. Maybe one of the most energetic players on the field for a 14-year career of all time.
And our producer, Jay Harris, found a funny clip on Facebook of a commercial that he once did, and hopefully we'll get a chance to run it here during the show for our MSG viewers to see. But he's basically making cookies to send to all the opponents he faced that he trash-talked and berated and insulted. And he's decorating cookies that say, my bad, on it. And he's sending
that's
them.
Great. That's great.
You got to see it. It's really good.
That's great. We got to get that on. And so we're going to talk about John Randall. He's coming on at 2 o'clock. We're going to have a little theme about what are some of the great undrafted players. We're going to talk about that, some of the great undrafted players in the history of the game. And our Twitter poll of the day, and the topic is along those lines, is which undrafted player on the Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019? And we gave you 4 choices, but you can obviously choose anybody you want.
There's more than 4, yeah.
We gave you 4, but you can choose any other player, and we'll give you the whole list as well. But the 4 we chose are Robert Foster, Cole Beasley, Lorenzo Alexander, and Levi Wallace. Now, there's a ton of guys, obviously, on the Bills roster that were not drafted, but these are the 4 we kind of, you know, the most likely candidates. We've also got a list of the most that was put out, 25 most influential or best football players who were undrafted and how they did. And obviously, there's a bunch of Hall of Famers on that list who didn't get drafted. Le'Veon Bell's back in the news for his 911 call after he got the jewelry robbed.
That'll be fun to talk
about.
Yeah,
it's classic. There's also a player bracket has been revealed. Chad Johnson, remember Ocho Cinco? He's got this idea where he's going to get 16 guys, and they're going to have a runoff with 40-yard dash races. It's going to be head-to-head races, elimination bracket. Top guy gets $1 million and gets to run 40 yards home. You know, I mean, that's very nice. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. Tyreek Hill is meeting with the NFL investigators this week. This is kind of big because they're not waiting for the civil suit to take its course, whatever that in the regular courts system.
It's not a criminal case.
Yeah, it's not a criminal case.
So they can
case.
Investigate immediately.
Right, but the league is gonna talk with him this week. Before that's all said and done, Tyreek Hill looking at a suspension for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. We also got an article. It was on the website, and one of your staff, I believe, Brownie, wrote the five ways the Bills defense can make progress this off has made progress this offseason, right?
It did.
We can get into that. And, sure. And some of it Bills fans will be familiar with and all of that.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, and this is the feedback I've gotten since that story ran, was there are still a healthy number of Bills fans that are concerned about the Bills' run defense. They feel that that was an area of concern last year. And I know it was in the red zone in particular. So I would agree with them on that standpoint. So they're concerned, you know, they see 10 of 11 starters coming back from a unit that struggled at times against the run, and they're wondering, you know, with all of the improvements on offense, is the run defense going to be any better? I think it is for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think a healthy Trent Murphy at left defensive end is going to make a world of difference when it comes to setting the edge over there. That's not to say that Shaq Lawson did a poor job, but for Trent Murphy, it's one of the strengths of his game. So I think that's a plus. Having a healthy guy over there and Trent Murphy starting, playing those rundowns, you know, and setting the edge. And then from a linebacker standpoint, you know, I think that what you have there are guys that can cover a lot of ground. I think Tremaine Edmonds is only going to get better from where he was last year when there were times where he was late making reads in the first half of the season and got fooled on plays and over-pursued and all of that. So I think that's an example of where they could be better also. And the guys on the back end, I think the other thing that hurt when Taron Johnson, you know, with his bad shoulder, it didn't change the way he played, but eventually they had to shut him down.
Right.
And Raphael Bush, although he did his best to play in that nickel role, I think was miscast just because they didn't have a better option.
Right.
But I think that impacted the run front because that nickel position in this Bills scheme defensively is huge when it comes to run support.
It's almost base personnel these days. Everybody runs the three.
A guy's
wides.
Acting like a linebacker when he's
and
on
he's
the field.
You got to have a guy who can cover a slot receiver and stuff the run. That's a hard guy to find in today's NFL.
Right. So I think those were some of the reasons why run defense suffered, and you know we can talk about that along with some of the other ways that the Bills made progress on defense, too.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that, how the Bills made some progress defensively in this lost offseason. Also, one of the things you might have heard about, and I'm not I am the world's smallest baseball fan. Let me put it in those terms, right? I am not a baseball fan. But Mets manager Callaway and pitcher Vargas got fined for a confrontation they had with the media, and I kind of did my best to delve into it a day after the fact. Yeah, a big to-do was raised because they had an altercation with one of the beat writers for the Mets. And then they came out and apologized without really apologizing. And obviously somebody from the upper management heard the non-apology and said, try again.
We'll have a lesson later in the show, Steve, about how to properly apologize.
I liked your rehearsal of the apology. Now go out and apologize is basically what came down from the high. So they did that. They went back out and had a second, which was
pathetic.
Pathetic. So then also the U.S. Women's National Team, Megan Rapinoe said, listen, it's
Rapinoe.
An epic quote. Rapinoe, I'm sorry. I apologize. Megan Rapinoe had a big – they're playing – the U.S. Women's National Team is playing the home team, France, in the World Cup, and it's coming up, and it is going to be an incredible game. I'm going to set this aside and make time to watch it.
Just to put this in perspective, Steve.
Go ahead.
These two teams playing each other are probably the two most complete teams in the tournament. It's like back in the old days when the poor AFC used to get knocked, and they used to say, oh, well, you know, Niners and Cowboys, NFC title game is the real Super Bowl, blah, 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 you know what I mean? That's kind of what you have here, and it's a quarterfinal. And there's been a lot of talk about France being the host nation and the pressure on those women to win this game and stay in the tournament. You know, as a host country, they're concerned that if France does lose, interest in the tournament as a whole over there is going to drop off the face of the earth because as much of the support as the U.S. women have had –
Imagine what it's like.
The American Outlaws.
Imagine what it's like.
In Europe, it has not gained the same level of traction.
Really?
The women's game. No, it has not. And this is where France as a nation wants to put on a good face all the way through to the end of this thing. to continue to uphold the women's tournament as something that is popular, is mainstream. And so there's a lot of pressure on the French players to come through in this game, right, stay in the tournament, keep the interest level high in their host, in their country. So there's a thought that even though the U.S., which has had a ton of support from the American Outlaws fan group, you know, will be there, that this will be the first time they don't have more support than their opponent because it's the home team. But who has right. more pressure? It might be France being the host nation.
Oh, no doubt. If they've got to be feeling it, no question about it. So we've got all that to talk about. And speaking of women's soccer, and I don't know if you didn't even say it yesterday. You said you had soccer practice last night. How'd that go, by the way? Is it a women's team that you coach?
I coach a girls' team and a boys' team.
You coach two of them. Did you have both have practice last night?
No.
Just one?
Just one. And then the other one's tonight. And then one plays Wednesday, one plays Thursday. My wife loves that we have 4 nights a week committed to
soccer. Oh, I'm sure.
Soccer.
Yes, sure.
She gets Friday.
Makes for the hectic home. You're still in the taxi mode, right? I mean, you're like driving around. And all.
My daughter's driving now, but we just ride to practice together.
Right. I mean, you're the coach, and what's she going to do, right?
Yeah. Why are you going to take two cars?
Does she drive to practice?
No.
You drive the car?
She's pretty environmentally conscious, so there's no way she'd have two cars driving two people.
I'm saying, does she drive with
you? I could let her, but I usually don't. All our gear is in my car.
Dad's not going to let little
all my gear is. Well, I don't mind, Dad. I don't mind it. All the gear is in my car, though.
You don't mind it, but secretly, you're not driving. Is she a good driver?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is her first. She hasn't been driving for more than a year. It's less than a year, but she's doing all right.
I know. It's a big thing. I mean, we should talk about it once in a while at some point if we get a chance. Because I had five children, and they were all from the time they were obviously infants till the time now when the youngest is 21. So I drove everywhere, everywhere. Yeah. My wife didn't drive. When the kids got old, they didn't drive. So it's a thing, right? Now it's to the point, I've been driving for so many years, I am not comfortable in the passenger seat. We went to Rochester last evening, and I hadn't eaten yet, so I got a quick bite to eat, and she said, well, I'll drive to Rochester while you eat. So we did that. She got behind the wheel and started driving. It was a nightmare, and she's not a bad driver. But she didn't.
Why was it a nightmare then if she's not a bad driver?
Like, even exiting our little village, I was like, why are you going? You got to go. You know, I'm always efficient. You know, I'm getting there to the best
shortest way.
And she could not care less about this. She's just taking it. She goes, oh, we're going this. We're going out. There's a major turn on the back road to Rochester. She goes, blows right by it. And I'm like, I'm just like spitting out my pop. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What? And she's like, no, we're going this way because it's a great drive this way. I was like, okay, no
scenic
warning.
Route.
I really struggle being a passenger.
Okay. I don't know. I rarely am the passenger, so I don't know. Maybe I can't speak to that yet. It was funny, though, because I was talking to a buddy of mine who's got a lot younger kids, younger kids.
Yeah.
One.
Car seats.
One still in diapers, two others in, like, elementary school, you know, 7, 8 years old.
Right.
And he's talking to me. He goes, oh, my gosh. He goes, your daughter's driving? I said, yeah. And he said, boy. He goes, is that tough? I said, actually, it's quite liberating because I'm not driving her hither and yon, you know, to this practice or to this training session or to this internship or whatever. She's driving herself. And he goes, well, help me understand. I said, okay. I said, when your firstborn got out of diapers, how liberating was that? He goes, I know exactly what you're talking about. So I had to put it in his perspective, in his terms, so he could understand
how
it was.
These life changes happen without even knowing it. So I'm totally with you. When that kid gets out of the car, when they get to that certain height where they get out of the car seat, boom, big change.
Yeah.
When you can leave the house without grabbing a diaper bag and a stroll, you know, all the
food,
paraphernalia. Yeah.
Snacks.
When you can just go, you just pick up and go. You know, we did that. We laughed at it because we got to the five kids. When that last one gets up off the floor and out of diapers and all that, when he gets out of diapers, then it's like, wow, it doesn't take us an extra 20 minutes to go anywhere.
It's a lot
less
to do.
We have so much free time, we're thinking. So let's get a dog.
Not with five kids, you know.
It's a thing. It's like, wow, we got all kinds. It's so liberating. You start to get this illusion that your life is free and easy, so you start taking on more stuff to do. And now you're right back into the...
I don't know how you did five.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, every time I'd travel, you'd see families, you know, going to Disney or going to the beach or wherever, and you'd see them. And you'd see a family with three kids or four kids, And you look in there, and you look. You just get this glazed look over your eye, like going, "Are you nuts? traveling with three kids? Are you insane?" And then I think about it, and go, "Oh my gosh, we did it with five. It's crazy. It's like a band of gypsies going down. You know, walking down the
can be.
Oh, and you're trying to keep track of them. And we've gone over this too. You on vacation. It's exhausting for a father to take his family on vacation.
Yeah, and when you have an odd number of total people, like you would have seven, that makes it tough, too, for seating,
I don't want to get on a ride. I don't want to go off on this too much because I don't want to be like some martyr because I'm not. I'm just like a regular dad. But you go on – and tell dads know this, too. You go on vacation with the wife and kids, and everybody else is – the kids, it's fun and games. They're like – they're gone. They're like
– you're a logistic man.
They're like dust in the wind. They're scattered, right, all over. If you go to a beach or whatever, they're everywhere. And your wife, the same thing. She could not be more relaxed. Finally, she just – you know, once you slop sunscreen on all the kids, you're done, right? Not me. Not the dad. The dad is not like that. I feel like I got to protect everybody in my little group. No matter where they are, I got to keep track of them. Watch
who's in over their knees.
Who are you? Are you the where's this one? Where's your brother? Where's your sister?
Who's getting buried in the sand?
Who's with the little one? Who's with him? Who's got, you know, who's getting, where is he? Where'd he go? Is he in the beach? Is he in the ocean? Where is he? Is he floating in the ocean? She went to get something. You're keeping track of all of them because, man, somebody, like, you know, watch so many movies. Somebody's going to run off with one of your kids, or one of your kids is going to drown, or one of them's going to get eaten by a lion at the zoo, or one of, you know, get disappeared. Two of them are going to wander off into the woods and fall off a cliff and be gone for three. You're thinking that as a dad, right? Depending on what your destination.
You actually sound more like a mom with that kind of thinking.
Hey, mom's on. Oh, mom's got the sunglasses on and a hat.
Reading
a book.
Yeah.
They don't feel the same sense.
Because my wife thinks like you do. Worst case scenario.
To me,
woman.
My wife. Not I say women. My wife is more of a nurturer.
Yeah.
She's more of a, go have fun. You know, it's an adventure.
Explore.
Adventures, explore, empower our children. And as a dad, I'm all about, listen, I want to make sure they're all, you know, come out of this alive.
I don't want to make an unnecessary trip to the hospital.
Right. It's to a hospital in another country.
Well, that too.
You know, like a Caribbean hospital or a south of the border hospital whatever it happens to be. You know? And it's like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So you're on edge. You can tell. You're on edge. I'm like that. The whole 8 days, 2 weeks you're on vacation, and it's like, you get home, and it's like, man, I need a nap.
You need a vacation from your vacation.
It's terrible. I must be just me, though, right? Because I don't see
No, my wife is worst-case scenario thinker all the time. It's worst-case scenario.
So maybe
it's
not a husband-wife thing. It's
one of the parents is usually always thinking that way, and I guess that's healthy. Because you need somebody to reel the whole operation back in, you know what I mean?
Oh, and they're like, yeah, let's go. Let's go on a day trip.
How about you get up off that railing?
Let's go.
You know what I mean?
Get on the top railing over the Niagara Falls so we
can
get a
better
angle for
the
picture.
This is not the uneven bars.
I mean, I had such a death grip on my kids when we went to the Niagara Falls. I just knew they were going to go over the edge.
Okay.
I just knew it.
Taking quick trip to the gorge.
My oldest was 6 weeks old or something. We finally took my parents up to the falls. And I remember having him on a front pack. He's 6 weeks old. And the kid can't even turn his head, right? I've got a bear hug on the – I'm like walking around with this bundle with both arms around it, staying like 4 feet away from the railing. I won't even look at the falls.
Grand Canyon is even worse because there is no railing.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you take the family there? I'm surprised you did.
No, I've had some things that I almost got physically sick when I thought about taking my kids. Have you ever been to the Cliffs of Moher in Ireland?
I have not, no.
Oh, they're like 500-foot cliffs.
Straight down, yeah.
No railing, no nothing, nothing. And the sign says, we don't do railings or safety measures here. We let nature take its course.
There's some Irish humor for you.
I'm like, if you get what you deserve.
We saw people. We went down one of the easier walking trails. You know, a trail. They have trailheads that go down on the south rim in the Grand Canyon. And so we just did this last spring 2018. So it wasn't that hot. And so we're just kind of walking down. And it's still, you got to watch your step. You know, otherwise you're going to slide a good couple hundred feet.
Right.
So we're walking down, and these people are taking pictures, like hanging off things, standing off the trail, like 1 foot slip and you are gone.
Yeah.
And
it's not pretty.
My wife is like, I can't even look at these people. I can't even look at these people. I got to keep walking. I can't even look at these people. And then, and even my kids are going, what the hell are they doing?
Your kids are doing.
What are
they're
scared doing?
Of your kids. That's awesome.
Because even they knew. I mean, this isn't brave. This is where you cross the line from brave to stupid.
See, and it's not just that either. You go out there at the wrong time of year, or later in the summer to the Grand Canyon. We've had friends that do this. Listen, there's like different levels of difficulty.
Yeah.
To go all the way to the bottom, all the way up, and so you got to. We're talking the desert.
Well, yeah, you got to bring water.
Right. It's like 110. In the sun all the time, and you know, and it goes higher than that, and you're walking and hiking, and it's hard work. So you got people going down there, and they don't have enough water or whatever to get back.
Yeah,
right. So they're like,
you gotta get airlifted.
Yeah, they gotta get airlifted because they just ran out of.
People don't take it seriously, nearly seriously enough.
Yeah,
for
and
sure.
And that's why, you know, family vacations to me were.
Well, it's that time
overrated.
Of the year for family vacations. So that was a good tangent.
It's staycations are where it's at. Stay at home. And tell everybody you're out of town.
Oh, yeah, that's even better.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We're here at One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're talking about a lot of stuff, and we got off on a tangent on family vacations for a minute. But we're also talking about undrafted players in the National Football League, who are maybe the greatest ones of all time, and which undrafted player on the Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019. We get all that. We're talking about anything else you want to talk about as well. The start date to NFL training camps was released officially yesterday, and I was going down the list too, Brandon. There's only like 8 clubs that move away for training camp these days,
yeah,
right?
It keeps dwindling.
Yeah.
The list keeps dwindling. And now the new thing this year is barely any open practices.
Yeah.
The Eagles only have 1.
Down.
I believe the Jets only have 4. So
the Bills only have what, 1, 2?
Open
one.
Practices?
Yeah.
No, they've got 8 open practices.
Do they?
Yeah. So.
I bet that changes.
And that number is down from last year, but it's still, if you compare it across the league, first being a team that goes away to training camp, mm-hmm. and then number 2, having 8 open practices, I would bet the Bills are near the higher end of the list in terms of access.
Yeah, I bet they do. They are. Yeah.
And fan, you know. Trying to be in a different region than they would be, you know, the other 11 months of the year.
Right.
You know?
Right. And all these, yeah, like, well, they all have to practice right at their own stadiums or in their own facilities.
And I think the Carolina Panthers are going to be the next team that does that because.
Move from Wofford College.
Yeah, they're going to be leaving Wofford College for their own facility that they're building.
Down there in
so
that
I
region,
don't,
though.
I don't know if it's going to be right near the stadium, but they usually work out of the stadium down there in Charlotte. And they've been building their own practice facility. And once that facility is done, I think they're going to be not going to Wofford anymore in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And they will be doing their training camp every year there. And whether that's open or not is probably up for debate also. So that might be another team that you tick off the list next year at this time.
So training camp starting, and that means the drafted, undrafted free agent, restricted free agents, veterans, everybody's showing up for training camp, including the undrafted guys. And we're asking our Twitter poll today, which undrafted player on the Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019? You can call in at 803-0550 or outside Buffalo, you can call us at 1-888-552-550. We've already got some feedback on this one because I think undrafted players kind of strike a nerve with everybody because everybody feels at some point in their life where they weren't invited to the party, you know?
Okay.
Getting undrafted. So everybody, I think people like to pick favorites that nobody else picks, and undrafted guys are a fertile ground for picking a favorite guy that nobody else knows about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I know what you're saying. I remember here there was a stretch where at least one undrafted guy made the 53-man roster for like a 7 or 8 year stretch,
yeah.
I want to say,
yeah.
In the 2000s there, whether you're talking about Jabari Greer, Jason Peters, Rashad Baker, there was a whole bunch of undrafted guys that would seemingly make the roster every year. And there were some guys that made some pretty major contributions to some teams.
Yeah.
Over that span, whether you're talking about Jabari Greer, who eventually got a big money contract, went to New Orleans and won a Super Bowl, or George Wilson, who wasn't undrafted by the Bills but came here a year or two after being in the league with Detroit and then switched sides of the ball and made an impact here defensively as a safety.
That is an athlete that can do that, and it's a smart guy as well.
Right.
And that's exactly what he was. He was a really smart, athletic guy who, you know, he found a place.
So there, and I remember reading this about a year or two ago, and I wish I had saved it, but it said, you know, most NFL fans are unaware that more often than not, when you run down the rosters in total in the NFL, there are more undrafted players on rosters than first-round draft choices. I mean, that blows my mind. Like, just because the total number is higher. The undrafted, when you think about it, Steve, every year a first-round draft pick, there's only 32 of them.
32 of them, yeah.
But undrafteds could number two or three a year if you keep them on the roster.
Well, yeah. Saying that, you're right. The number is smaller to begin with.
But it sounds shocking,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It sounds like all those first-rounders are out of the league, and that's not really the case.
But right.
Yeah, I get it.
There's just
you're
a finite number of first-rounders and an unlimited number of undrafted.
But there's a couple of hundred guys drafted every year, and a couple of hundred, not even a couple of hundred probably, that are not drafted that are in the league. And,
right.
And those are the ones that have either had a chance and weren't good enough or whatever. But whatever, which it's interesting, and we're going to talk about it all day. The tweet sheet daily, the tweet sheet says, "Brought to you by Corgan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Which undrafted player on the Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019?" The tweet sheet from Jack says, "Tough one today. I want Robert Foster to take the next step and turn into a superstar, diamond in the rough. While I think he still can, it's a lot to ask in year two." Cole Beasley, B's 11, has the experience and the NFL track record. If healthy, he's going to have a major role to play in the offense in 2019 and be Josh's favorite target. And that's why this is a pretty good question, because there are you look at it and think there's potential. There's on both sides of the coin. There's potential.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Potential and proven ability.
Right.
Potential sometimes is that happy little carrot that you reach for and forget about the thing you've got in hand. You know, Cole Beasley is a really good player and has been a really productive player. And has, you know, proven himself to be a guy that's really tough to cover in the slot. He's right. Got a chance to have a really good year here in Buffalo.
He
and
does
be a difference maker.
He does, you know. But that is you're guessing, you're hoping. Hasn't really been on the field with Josh yet. How long does it take for those two to establish chemistry? I don't think there's any debate that most of the throws going to Cole Beasley are going to be high percentage type throws. He's going to be working the underneath areas as the slot receiver. So logic would say, yeah, he's going to get targeted a lot, because even if he's not the number one read in the route concept, there are going to be times where Josh is just going to have to check it down to him.
Sure.
So that all speaks to him probably being at or near the top in targets, which should translate into making an awful lot of plays for this offense. But that has to all materialize with his time on the field. And, you know, I don't think it'll be a major issue for him to get up to speed in camp.
There's also an issue to this about offense-defense. How tough is it for an undrafted guy, or for any guy, to make an impact? Certainly a guy like Cole Beasley and Robert Foster, they're going to depend a lot on Josh Allen and how he's playing, which is also not so much for maybe you and me,
right,
but for people outside, that's a huge question mark, is how Josh is going to play. And Robert Foster and Cole Beasley are solely dependent on that. Now, the other side of the ball, Lorenzo Alexander, Levi Wallace, not so much. Their opportunities are going to come every snap, depending on where the ball's thrown or run to.
Yeah, and not only that, if we think about Lorenzo Alexander in his first year in this system under Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier, he played off the ball a ton in 2017, was not up on the line of scrimmage in pass rushing situations, and the impact that he had in the previous scheme proved to be far more influential than it did in this scheme. And then in 2018, they made a greater effort in making him a bigger part of the pass rush packages, because 2 years removed from that, he had gone to the Pro Bowl with 12 and a half sacks. So by putting him up on the line more last season, he made more of an impact. So I think they'll keep that role relatively the same for him. But those are other things to consider, too, when you're trying to pick and choose, you know, which undrafted you think makes the most impact.
803-0550 to get in on the conversation. You're listening to Steve Tasker, Chris Brown on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. We'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit more about which undrafted player will have the biggest impact in 2019. John Randall, the Hall of Famer, is coming on at 2 o'clock and more, so stay with us. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown on a Tuesday, a beautiful Tuesday in Orchard Park, New York. The turf is going down in the stadium, and Brownie and I are sitting here talking about undrafted players in the National Football League as we're on the cusp of getting ready to start training camp. Those guys are all kind of still in the mix for being those great big unknowns that nobody knows about. Some right. of them have been veteran players who are really good guys on the Bills, like Cole Beasley and Lorenzo Alexander. Robert Foster's got a year in. Levi Wallace has got a year in. So some of these guys are veteran players. You go down, guys like Ty Nsekhe, Jason Kroom, Tyree Jackson is a rookie, and so is Duke Williams is an NFL rookie. So you got some guys like that who have miles of potential, but you know, it's a question mark as to whether they're even going to make the team, let alone yeah. have a career like some undrafted guys like John Randall, who's going to be our guest, who goes to the Hall of Fame as an undrafted player.
Right, so we'll take our listeners' picks at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. So it doesn't necessarily have to be one of these guys in the Twitter poll. It could be one of those guys that Steve just mentioned as well, because there's about seven or eight.
So it's time to ask you. I mean, what, you know, if our four choices are Robert Foster, Cole Beasley, Lorenzo Alexander, Levi Wallace, as to which undrafted player will on the Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019. What's your pick, Brownie?
Mine's Robert Foster.
Okay, and tell me why.
Well, it's a couple of things. I was a little bit on the fence because I was thinking Cole Beasley because of the reasons I was talking about in the last segment, you know, likely to have the top target total, high percentage throws, more chances to make plays. But I think if we're talking about impact
right.
in 2019, I think Robert Foster is going to be making the game-changing plays. You know, Cole Beasley is going to help keep you on the field. Robert Foster is going to be making a difference on the scoreboard with big plays. And I roll in there the fact that this is a guy that has built-in chemistry with Josh Allen. Those two worked together a ton last year. And people are going to maybe sneeze at his stats from last year and say, whatever, you know, rookie. Because I wrote a story about him in mid-January on BuffaloBills.com. He had 27 catches for 541 yards and three touchdowns last year.
Right.
Almost all of that production came in the last seven games of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yeah. He was off the team for a minute.
Led the NFL in yards per catch, 20 per catch. Last time a Bill did that was Eric Moulds in 98 when he went to the Pro Bowl. The next four receivers on yards per catch in the NFL after Foster, DeSean Jackson, Josh Gordon, Mike Evans, and Dante Pettis, who was also a rookie last year. That's a pretty good group, number one. He was the only NFL rookie last year with three 100-yard receiving games in 2018, putting him in a group with Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Thomas, and Amari Cooper as rookies with three 100-yard receiving games in their rookie season since 2015. I mean, we're talking pretty exclusive company here. By the way, he also led all rookies in receiving yardage from week 10 to 17, the last seven games of the season when he played.
Right.
So this is a guy who was undrafted. The other guys behind him among the rookies, all of them right behind him on that stat list, were drafted in the first or second round.
Sure.
So for me, for my money, in terms of impact from an undrafted player, Foster is my number one guy for 2019 because I just think he's going to take the cover off of this thing. And now with upgrades at the receiver position, a better offensive line, what we believe is a deeper running back core, you can't put all your full attention on Robert Foster. You can't do it.
Right.
So what are you playing? Are you going to play cover two with two safeties deep and roll those guys over the top and leave the underneath for
Beasley? I don't know that anybody was staying up nights, even in the second half of last season, waiting for Robert Foster to beat him. You know, like if you're playing the Jets or the Dolphins or the Patriots or any of the teams that we played in the second half of the year, I don't know that anybody was saying, all right, Robert Foster was the focal point of our defense. I still think they were looking at LeSean McCoy.
Oh, they're looking at Josh too,
and they were looking at Josh
running
and Clay and all whatever. But yeah, I get it. And that brings up an interesting dynamic, because you think, talk about Robert Foster in comparison to the other offensive guy on this list, Cole Beasley. And you mentioned it. Let's spin it positive for both these guys. Goes exactly how we think it's going to go. Cole Beasley comes out, has 110 catches for 1,000 yards.
That's Wes Welker numbers.
Right. It's that slot. It's the greatest slot receiver ever. Now, Robert Foster, and he'll average what? Maybe 7 or 8 catches a game, right?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And average 11 yards a reception.
Right, exactly. Or maybe 9.5 even, right? So that's Cole Beasley. He has like maybe 7 touchdowns, mm-hmm. right? But he has, but say out of his 110 catches, 70 of them are for first downs, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you take that production, and then you stack it up against like a guy like Robert Foster. Maybe he has 70 catches.
Or even for, 60.
Yeah, or 60, yeah. Okay, 55 catches or something. Say he has kind of the, like, doubles his production from last 7 games of last year, or prorate it. So he has like 55 catches, 60 catches. And he has, what would it be? Over 1,000 yards, right?
Yeah, you have 20 yards a pop it
would
be.
Right, okay. So you're talking
about, I mean, even if you're 17, you're right there.
All right, so he has that. But his plays, like maybe on 5 or 6 games, he makes
the game-changing play to win the game.
We've all seen it. We go down through 150 plays in an NFL game. 3 of them are the difference.
Yep.
He makes one of those every third game.
I'll give you a perfect...
Every third game...
I'll tell you right now, he's already done it. 6 straight games last year. You know, week 10 to 17.
Right.
6 straight games, at least 1 catch of 25 yards or more. Every game.
Right. And I get it. 20, those are nice catches. But I'm talking about, you know, the 70, like the Jacksonville
catch. But I think
catch.
It speaks to the big playability that I'm talking about.
So how does Cole Beasley's impact compare with Robert Foster's impact?
And does it trump
Cole, does Cole Beasley's impact give Foster the opportunity? You know, because they got 3 more first downs on that drive because of Cole Beasley. And then on the third... On that third first down he gets, they hit the 45-yard TD in the back of the end zone, right?
And to be fair,
which impact is better?
Well, I mean
that's hard. That's the question.
And hey, if they can complement each other that way, it's a great dilemma.
Listen, in terms of
determining who's making a bigger impact.
I mean, we put that out. We're spinning everything positive for both of these guys and how big their impact could possibly be if they both make the impact that they're prototypically we've seen them make. You know, then it's kind of wild. Yeah. They're both, you know, it's a great problem to have, but it's probably not going
to
be.
And one more thing, and then we'll get to the phones at 803-0550. Robert, I think, is also somewhat misconstrued as strictly a go route guy. As we got to the end of the season last year, the last 3 or 4 weeks, he was not just running go routes.
He's
running curls.
Late. Yeah.
He's running comebacks.
Caught the crossing curl.
Running hooks.
Right on the goal line against Miami, week 17. He caught that little pass going
across the middle. I asked Brian Daboll about him. And remember, Daboll had him for a year at Alabama also.
So that was a huge plus.
He can run a variety of routes. This is Daboll talking about Foster. Obviously, running vertical is a strength of his because of his speed. But I think our staff did a good job with him in terms of top of route technique, releases, playing against tight press. Those are all things you have to work on as a young receiver coming into this league. And then that was seconded by Zay Jones, because I talked to Zay about Robert, and he said in that Jacksonville game, Robert's not only running go routes, but curls, deep intermediate routes where Rob's coming back to the football. Against Detroit, he was running crossing routes. These are all games late in the year last year, and that's the development he was showing after basically playing in 8 games last year. He played half a season his rookie year. So coming year 2, knowing the offense and diversifying his game, I mean, I really think he could really take off this year.
Yeah. So you can get in on the conversation, 803-0550, which undrafted player on the Bills roster is going to have the biggest impact in 2019. We're going to take a call. It's a little early in the show, I know, to take a call. But Dean and Alden, you've been holding for a little bit. Dean, thanks for calling the program. Steve and Chris on One Bills Live. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I think Mitch Miller is going to make a really big impact.
You mean Mitch Morse?
I believe, is he a center?
Yeah,
he was a second-round draft choice. He wasn't undrafted.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll have to go with Cole Beasley then.
Yeah, okay. Why do you think Cole Beasley rather than Robert Foster? Because that's the debate we've been having.
But maybe the speed and the size that he can slot receiver, and kind of like the guy that plays on the New England Patriots.
Yeah, Edelman. Like Edelman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dean, thanks for the call. You're right, and I get it. When he's talking about offense, and I don't know how many. We'll get to the statistics and how people are looking at this, other than us, as well. I want to see what the statistics are, but people always gravitate toward the offensive guys. Like Lorenzo Alexander is going to be on the field for just as many snaps as any of these receivers are going to be. He's going to be on the field, and so is Levi Wallace. Theoretically,
I think what fans are doing here is they're trying to connect the dots, and they look at Cole Beasley and they say, okay, small slot receiver, you know, got good quicks for separation. And Brian Daboll's here. He comes from the New England coaching tree. Their offensive scheme is somewhat similar to what New England runs. Edelman catches about 90 to 100 passes a year in New England. Beasley can do that here. He's going to make the most impact. So I see those dot connecting mind games working in the the heads of our listeners here and in our Twitter respondents. So I get why they're going that way. And really, you know, in some ways, as you were just saying about Lorenzo and Levi, it is a little unfair because it does kind of this kind of topic does gravitate to the offense because their statistics are more easily measured. Their impact on a game is more easily measured. I mean, outside of sacks and interceptions, I think a lot of fans, you know, sometimes they I don't want to say they struggle, but they have a hard time quantifying impact if they don't have a hardcore stat to go off of on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, on the defensive side of the ball, you've got to be willing to sit there in a dark room and watch film. Yeah. And know what you're looking at. Now, coaches do that, and they are on top of it, and they get that. But for the most part, we don't do that.
And in defense of Levi Wallace, real quick, I mean, he's a guy that is excellent when it comes to breaking up passes. The next step he has to take now is turning those into picks. And if he can do that, the Bills might really have something there, and that's really the step he's got to take.
So which undrafted player on the Buffalo Bills roster will have the biggest impact in 2019? The respondents, 47% of you say it's Cole Beasley.
Oh, wow.
30% say it's going to be Robert Foster. 17% say Lorenzo Alexander. And only 6% say Levi Wallace. If you're looking for a precedent in any of these situations, Levi Wallace playing opposite the number one corner in Tre'Davious White, you look back decades and decades, and you remember a guy named Mike Haynes who played opposite the side that of I just lost his name.
Larry.
No.
Willie Brown.
No. The other guy. The other great Oakland corner.
Not Lester Hayes.
Lester Hayes.
Oh.
Lester Hayes, who went to the Pro Bowl, had a season where he had 14 or 15 interceptions in a year, and everybody couldn't figure it out. And one of the reasons they say they finally figured it out was because nobody could throw at Mike Haynes. And they said they kept throwing at Lester Hayes because Mike Haynes was shutting their guy down. So that was a reason that Lester Hayes actually got on the radars because they kept throwing at him and he kept picking him off. He was a really good corner as well. In case you didn't know that.
Also had Gorilla Glue on his hands. Yeah.
Well, that was legal back then. So Levi Wallace could emerge as a guy
stick
who
him.
Gets
remember
the
all
benefit.
That stick him?
Yeah, he gets the benefit of the guy on the other side of him playing well. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown. We're on One Bills Live presented by Clyde Health. We're going to come back and talk more about undrafted players. We've got John Randall coming on at 2:00. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Undrafted player on the Bills roster is going to have the biggest impact in 2019. We're kind of getting carried away with it, but we are getting a lot of feedback. At the top of the hour, we're going to talk about the 25 best undrafted NFL players of all time. Think back, and we've got some – the list that we've got in front of us has some of these guys back from 1946. There's one from 66, another one from 46. That's 1967, 1960. So there's some older guys in here that some of our older listeners will maybe remember. There's a couple of guys on here that I remember extremely well. But let's take a call about the Buffalo Bill, who is undrafted, who's going to make the biggest impact for the team this year. Scott in Rochester. Scott, thanks for calling the program. This is Chris and Steve. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm kind of torn in between the Beasley situation and the Foster. I'm thinking as far as Foster with the eye-hand coordination, I think that brings a lot to the table for the short game, getting us the first downs we're going to need, and then seeing Foster kind of open it up after we get that first down for the big chunk play. I'm going to have to pick one. I'm going to have to go with Beasley just because I'm thinking what he brings to the table as far as receptions and, you know, just his overall diversity as far as his athleticism and whatnot. So that's my input, and I'll hang up and listen. Have a good one.
Thanks, Scott. I agree with him. I think, you know, out on a limb and said which one I think, and I'm going to have to agree with Scott. I think it's going to be Cole Beasley for this reason. You're right. Foster is the kind of player, and if he can put together an entire season like he did the last seven games of last year, he's got a chance to be a superstar. I mean, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, he was unbelievable.
I mean, I don't want to go this far yet. I want to see more of him before I make this claim, but he stays on this track. I mean, you could potentially be talking about a number one receiver in
the
core.
Okay, so you got that. But here's the thing why I think Beasley's going to have a bigger impact. Because of the position he plays and because of the guy that's throwing to him, and Josh Allen, he's been his completion percentage has not been what you wanted. People think that he is inaccurate. I think it's more about his decision-making. And you talk about a guy like Robert Foster. Listen, they dropped back and they just threw it deep last year. Those are low percentage passes. Your completion percentage is going to be hurt by that. They didn't have the players around him last year to allow him to throw it underneath on a consistent basis. That wasn't the way their offense was built. They didn't do that last year because they didn't have a running game and because the underneath lanes were so clogged with nine guys in the box stopping a running game that they had, that was the only weapon the Bills really had consistently, trying to keep Josh Allen in the pocket, trying to keep LeSean McCoy in the inside, trying to keep Chris Ivory hemmed in. You know, that's all the defense has really thought about. So if you're going to take those low percentage shots over the top, we'll give you one of those a game, but you're not going to hit 10 of them that you try. I think Cole Beasley's presence and the fact that he's going to be a proven commodity out there, the trust that he could develop with Josh Allen, the comfort level he could give with Josh Allen, and the opportunities they could get from an offense that knows how to use him could make the quarterback that much better. And I think that his impact not only on the way he plays in his own production, but the security blanket he could become for a young quarterback like Josh Allen, who's really trying to take that step in the game, I think that impact could be, you know, really, really huge.
And while I get all of that, and I could very easily argue that point with you, I'll be devil's advocate here just on behalf of Foster and say because of that underneath presence, I think that's going to afford Foster more opportunities with some more favorable matchup situations where he can make more of those game-changing type plays, which is what you want. You want that kind of balance across your receiving core, and if Beasley can provide that on the underneath stuff, I think it only opens up more opportunities for Robert Foster deep. And Josh Allen was a pretty damn good quarterback last year off play action.
Yeah.
And if the running game's better this year, because last year it went nowhere, he's going to be even a more effective deep ball thrower off play action if the run game is holding defenses honest.
All right, we've got Michael from Cheektowaga. We'll get to you after the break. You can get in on the conversation as well, 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. The tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. We've got one more from Born Divine. My pick, he says, is Zoe Alexander. his leadership, and now and how he brings it will trickle down. You just watch. So he's thinking, and I'll tell you what, I
that's
get
a whole
that.
Different commodity.
It's a whole different commodity when your level of leadership, your presence in the locker room, your presence on the practice field, showing these guys how to do it, trickles down and elevates the guys around you. That's really hard to quantify, but it doesn't make it less valuable. And I'll tip my hat to that tweet because you're right. I've seen it happen. I've seen guys, and just the fact that they're on your team makes you want to be better and elevate your attitude. And I think that could happen in the Bills locker room.
Yeah, and I mean, I think especially with Kyle Williams now retired, Lorenzo Alexander is the go-to leader on that side of the ball. You may have Tremaine Edmonds running this defense and being a leader that way, but I think everybody knows who the lead dog is when it comes to, yeah. I've seen this, and I've seen a lot of other things in this league. This is how we got to be coming out of this game to get ready for the next one, whatever the piece of advice might be. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, this is the Yoda of the Bills roster, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a long way to go. We're going to be here till 3 o'clock. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. We're going to be talking about the 25 best undrafted NFL players of all time after the break. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.